Welcome to our podcast at agendadigitale.eu.
Welcome to the Secure in Mind podcast, the podcast which discusses ethics, technology, artificial intelligence, security, privacy, and everything else involved, and why we as humanity need to care about these things if we want to move forward in the future. So today I have with me a very special guest. He is Jason A.E. Street. He's very famous in the hacking world as someone who knows how to bypass security measures and controls. And we are going to discuss a variety of fantastic subjects, including how he has broken into many places that he shouldn't have been able to get into, but he has been paid to get into by the company or the government institution, etc., and what he believes that society should do in order to up the game of this security mentality. So welcome, Jason.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very, very well. How's things on the other side of the planet?
It's going pretty good. Settling into my new house in Houston, so it's like slowly but surely getting the lab back together.
Where did you move from?
Oklahoma City.
No, I'm not from the States. I'm an random Australian living in Italy. So we are truly in an international world and podcast. How far away is Houston from Oklahoma City?
It's about an 8-hour drive.
Okay, cool. All right. I'm trying to picture it on the map.
It's not many places. Usually when I travel abroad, I was born and raised in Houston. And instead of trying to tell people where Oklahoma was, it's like I tell them, you know, New York and Los Angeles, I'm where you fly over to get to those places. It's like,
I can visualize it now perfectly.
Exactly.
Oh, awesome. And what's driven the move there? Is that a new company or have you got a new job or what are you doing?
Well, as basically since I'm working with Sphere and Y, all my time is travel. It's like going to conferences, going to classes, teaching classes, going to companies and teaching them security awareness or breaking into places. So it doesn't matter where I live. And so my family was like, okay, well, it doesn't matter where you live. I want to move back to be around my family or my wife's family. So and since I like my in-laws better than I like my family, I said, okay, sure, no problems. Let's go do that.
Well, you're an anomaly as a person, and I think the anomalous thing about liking the in-laws more as well, both of them are synchronized. So I guess a bit of background. So for the listeners out there who aren't aware of some of the amazing work that you do, because it is truly amazing, I'm really, really excited to jump into the guts of that. If we wind the clock back a bit and get a sense of why you ended up being in this industry, you know, what drove you into this industry? What drove you especially to get on this side of the industry? What I mean to the listeners out there who aren't sort of security savvy is I guess you have a number of paths that you can choose. You can choose some of these skills to break in for good or for bad. So give us a bit of a lowdown, rundown, whatever the correct term is of your background and what's brought you to here.
Okay. Yeah, I'll start off with one thing that there's always a misconception of people thinking that a hacker is something that you get into as a profession or that you learn or you can actually stop being one. It's like, or like a former hacker. It's like, no, it's like I was born a hacker. It's like I've always thought about the world, like how could I make things different? How can I change things? I liked spaceships when I was younger, like in my, 11 or 12 years old. And my family would give me Hot Wheel cars. So I would take the wheels off and turn them into spaceships. It's like, it's changing what I would get wood blocks and turn them into walkie-talkies or robots. It's like, so it's about using your imagination and using what you have to do different things with things. So it's like hacking is 200 years ago, you called us inventors and creators and artists. Yeah. It's like the definition's changed now, but so I've always been a hacker, but I've always also loved security. I loved helping people. And I started off when I was around 18, got into physical security. It's like I've always liked doing security, like figuring out how the bad guy was going to break in and then making sure the defenses were ready for it in the physical world. And I was on a gang task force for like 3 years as a supplemental officer. And I got tired of getting shot at literally. So I went back into physical security. But then in 96, I found out about a tech support company that was hiring. So I got into IT. It's like I started doing tech support because I always was good with computers as well. I was helping some of the police officers with their computers at home. It's like, and so I started doing tech support and working on fixing computers. And then in 2000, my whole life changed. And that's when I found out that you could do computers and security and no one shoots at you, but you're still helping and securing and protecting things. And I was like, awesome.
That's the lack amazing. Of bullets, which is a really, that's the draw card, is it?
Exactly. And it's funny how the times changed, because now I'm back to being in the position now where people could possibly shoot at me. It's all, so it's really weird how it works out.
Life is beautiful in its irony, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And so then I started doing that. And then about 2000 and I would say 2009, 2010, I started getting interested in doing research for a book, my second book on social engineering, or the third book on social engineering and physical compromise. And so I started actually doing some talks on it. And then people said, well, you're talking really good on it. It's like, can you back that up and actually do one of these? So I started actually doing some of the social engineering and the physical compromise. And it turned out I was pretty good at it. So I've been robbing banks and hotels and state treasuries ever since.
Which, and you get paid for it as well, and you wouldn't get arrested and dragged away if you got caught. Actually, here's a question. On some of the engagements, when you are in the midst of an engagement, let's say that you are compromised and caught, shall we say, what happens? Because you're obviously paid by the company, but probably only one or two people at the higher ups of the company know that you're there to infiltrate.
Right. What I usually do is I will have a representative of the company that will be in the vicinity at all times. So my whole plan is, because there are certain parts of this engagement where I'm actually going to get caught, where I try to get caught, because it's an educational moment. And the funny thing is whenever I've been found out and told to like, you know, to stop, it's like only one time where was it really an unusual issue where it's like they were like, okay, you know, they weren't taking no for an answer. They were like, we need to verify this. And I was like, okay, fine, verify it. And there was no person with me, but that was fine and it worked out fine. My most problems have come after I've successfully compromised the place. And then I come back, I wait 2 minutes outside, and I don't do red teaming. I don't do red team, or I don't do vulnerability assessments. I do security awareness engagements. So I will leave the building after successfully compromising it and stealing the data or stealing the computers or actually, you know, just breaking into the places. And then I will come back in. And then I will proceed to talk to every single person that I compromised and explain to them what went wrong. And it's usually at that moment where the confrontation happens, where now they want to retroactively arrest you or retroactively capture you or retroactively say, oh, well, we've caught you. Like, you can't. And I'm like, no, it's like,
Moment. That's when emotions run high and they get a bit pissed off at the fact that you were able to breach. Or
oh, my gosh. I had, There was one time in New York where it's like the receptionist was like, I'm calling the police. I'm like, now you're just being the sore loser. I'm telling you I already won. It's like it's no fair now. And I was literally having dinner that night with two NYPD cyber division people. And I was like, if you wait just a couple of minutes, they're going to be picking me up for dinner anyway. It's like, and then one time in Beirut, Lebanon, the lady was just like furious. I mean, she started off the conversation when we got in her office like, let me explain to you why I hate Americans. And I'm like, this is not going to go well. This is not going to go well. And it can get a little hairy. It's like after you try to explain to them.
Yeah, maybe with overseas engagements. Have you ever kicked off any world wars?
No, I've come pretty close. I've actually, there was one time I accidentally robbed the wrong bank while I was in Lebanon. And I mean, but you got to understand, I mean, who hasn't robbed the wrong bank before? Mistakes happen.
So okay, many times.
So that took me about 4 hours to stay out of Lebanese jail, which was good. It's like so there's certain situations where it's like are a little bit more dicey than the next.
Yeah. Well, for the listeners out there who want to pursue a career which is definitely interesting and different, this certainly seems to be up maybe up your alley. Jason, let's jump back to a discussion around the state of security.
Right.
So you're employed by these, or you're commissioned by these companies, whether they be private enterprise, possibly government as well. I believe you've collaborated with law enforcement, you've collaborated with different government departments. And you're there, you said, to assess and educate about security. So two things. One, what is the difference for the listeners out there between a red team engagement, a vulnerability assessment, and what you do? And then secondly, what is the state of security? It's a very general question, I realise, and there'd be certain, you know, extremes on the spectrum, but where are we at generally and where should we be? So those two questions.
Let me break all that down. One thing to clarify is that I've done work and consulting for like several different governments. It's like I'm a global citizen. It's like, so if your country's trying to do better and trying to defend themselves from attacks, it's like I will be there to help. And it's like I have no problem with that. It's like I don't do any offensive training on those kind of things. It's all about security awareness and security defense. So I'm a very big proponent of that.
So that you hear that, guys in Italy and guys in Australia. Okay, mental notes.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to visit Italy again, and I've never been to Australia, and it's one place I'm still trying to get a conference to get me there for. So, yeah, I would love to travel there.
We'll see what we can do.
Awesome. And the second part is red team engagement is the kind of, it's based off of like the capture the flag red team versus blue team. It's like an old military. I'm not going to go into it because I don't have that much experience on the origin of it, and I like to talk about what I know. Mm-hmm. But red team engagements are more full, intense physical penetration and network penetration, where they're actually trying to do a vulnerability. They're actually trying to gather data from the company's servers, trying to actually compromise and like actually get in as like a full red team, like where they're going in almost no holds barred, a very open scope, where they're actually trying to do a full penetration, and then they'll finish that, and then they leave without a trace if they're lucky, and then they write a report up, give it to management, and then like 3 or 4 months later, an employee gets a memo saying, "Hey, this is what we have to do because somebody did something, you know, a while back that showed that there was a vulnerability," which is my problem with it. It's like vulnerability assessments are where they're just like scanning, and they're like, they're not really actually breaking into the system. They're showing there's a possible vulnerability. Mm. What I do is I'm creating a security aware, a teachable moment is what I call it. It's like I'm creating a security awareness engagement. In other words, I'm physically trying to break in. I will physically break into the server. It's like I will take a computer, but I bring it immediately back and educate the people on how I got away with it. I will put in a device called like a Bash Bunny or a Wi-Fi Pineapple Nano or a Packet Squirrel from Hack5. They have these tools, but my payloads, instead of being malicious or actually gathering data off their system, actually opens up something that's harmless and security awareness engaging. Like if I'm on a Windows machine, I plug in a Bash Bunny, and all of a sudden in PowerShell, it shows Rick Astley and it rickrolls you in ASCII text. It's like,
you know, look, this is why I love what you do, and I love the angle that you're just talking about right now. It's not about writing a report which will get handed down, you know, filtered down through the cracks months later or weeks later, and then implemented. This is a real, it's a rude shock to the system, but a necessary one, right?
And exactly, yeah. It's an inoculation because there's one major thread that is connecting all of us all over the planet. Every single place I've been to, all over the world, I've only been like 42 countries, 43 countries or something right now, but it's like, it's the same wherever I go. It's never going to happen to me. It happens to somebody else.
Yeah.
It's like, that's one of our biggest flaws that we have to fix. And it's like, and you don't fix it by telling someone, you fix it by showing them what could happen.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill once said, there's nothing more exhilarating than being fired upon without effect. It's like, I mean, it wakes you up and you realize that could have been a real bullet. I could have been shot.
So here's the thing, right? I mean, your training, and for the listeners out there, all you have to do is look up Jaysone space E space Street on YouTube or Google, and you'll come up with a bunch of links that'll point you to talks that Jason has done on DEF CON and Black Hat and a range of other hacking events, and they're fantastic, and they have titles. One of probably my favorite: steal everything, kill everyone, cause total financial ruin. These are great, and yet it's not the scope that you're able to, well, the amount of people that you're able to touch with this education and the amount of people that you're able to affect, it's certainly not going to be enough to cause a societal kind of change, right? So from your position and in your opinion, what do you think needs to happen further in terms of, you know, policy, in terms of education, in terms of on the technology side, in terms of controls, in terms of those aspects, right? Where say federal government, state government, and even look at in the domicile with, you know, with the parents and the kids,
right?
All of those things. What can we do? What are your sort of thoughts? And have you had discussion?
One of my key things, and you're right, I'm not going to be able to affect the societal change. What I'm trying to do is teach and train the people who teach and train and secure the users.
Yeah.
I realize that I'm not going to be able to go and talk to all the users, but I'm trying to go and talk to the people who are actually going back to their enterprises and trying to educate them, because the one biggest fallacy that we have in the information security industry right now is that technology is going to fix our human problem.
Yeah.
When the fact is, it's humans that are going to help aid our technology problem. So what that means is we got to stop saying stupid user clicked on a link or a stupid user went to a website. They weren't properly educated because of the failing of security. So it was stupid security who didn't properly train their users, and stupid security who didn't properly train their users not to click on the links. So I do a lot of equating with delivery drivers. And my whole point on how to get people to educate them is to stop trying to talk tech. Talk and couch it in ways that people understand, people can readily identify. So if you're a company and you hire a delivery driver because their job is to do deliveries, on the day one of their job, when you first come in, do you give them the keys to the delivery vehicle and go, okay, we've hired you, you must know what you're doing, you can go now? No, you train them.
Yeah.
Because that's equipment that they're responsible for. You tell them how they're responsible to that equipment. You tell them they have to use turn signals. They have to use their seat belt. They have to obey the speed limits and the speed laws. You even do monitoring sometimes with GPS or tracking devices on the vehicle to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And you put a number on the back of the vehicle to call, and someone can report them if they're not doing properly. But, and that's the same thing with the computer. When you give them a computer, you don't just give them a computer and tell them to start work. You're supposed to be educating them to understand how they're supposed to be protecting themselves, obeying the speed limit. It's like using their turn signals, using their seat belts, making sure that the systems are updated. They're doing their patching. They're doing their, make sure that they have virus on, antivirus on. And when a delivery driver crashes that vehicle, you educate them.
Yeah, and there just still seems to be that disconnect between that physical realm obviousness and the digital realm. I mean, if you consider, say, a car, for example, everyone is aware that if you leave a car in a city, right, and it's unlocked, well, chances are you might get your stuff stolen from the back. An opportunistic thief will steal it. If your doors are locked, you lessen the degree of probability of a thief stealing your stuff. Now, it's not completely negated. I could come across with a brick and break your window just as easily, but it's still hugely negated because that opportunistic, just simply open the handle is gone. Add to that, if it's a newer car, if you've got, you know, mechanisms and sirens and blah, 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 you're constantly reducing that attack, the potential for attack. But I think still, and this is a general statement, right? Because obviously, you know, many people are quite savvy in tech, but as a general statement, we're still getting, you know, a flood of attacks, and people are still getting hammered by phishing attacks. So there's obviously still a problem out there. I think that disconnect between the physical obvious nature of the need for security and the digital realm is still so vast, isn't it?
Well, yeah, well, exactly, because it's the lack of proper communication. Yeah. We, in our industry, have for so long equated, and when we talked down to our users and down to our executives, we've talked in a way of the technical realm. It's like, because we talked in our parlance, in our language, and it's like, and the way that we're used to communicating with each other, that has to stop. It's like, we need to be able to communicate properly and effectively to the people we're communicating to. Yeah. That's not on them to learn our terminology and our frame of reference. It's on us to learn that, because those are the people that we're trying to secure. Those are our clients, those users, those executives, those employees. They're not just, you know, a liability. They're a possible, a great potential asset if we can properly train them to help protect themselves and our company.
We also need them symbiotically to exist.
Exactly.
For our existence to be maintained. Yeah, you're spot on there. And it's it comes down to a communications thing, doesn't it? In reality, it, which is, I guess, historically, and again, a general statement, people in tech haven't been renowned for their, you know, their ability to communicate, that well into general discussion. Whereas that is fundamentally what you're saying. It's about that ability to educate easily, simply, with the user who doesn't use those tech terms and tech speak.
Yeah. Most people would rather, you know, have to go and format hard drives, you know, 24/7 than have to actually talk to another human being in an empathetic, emotional way. That's why they want to build more blinky boxes to solve these problems, thinking that if you just build the right blinky box with the, you know, maybe some extra green or blue lights, it's like, it'll solve our problem. But it's still always going to be the human and how you communicate with them.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Matteo, he uses a purple monkey, I believe, as part of his educational toolkit. I think he's the deputy CISO in a very large organization here in Europe. So, and that seems to be very successful. So that's a note for all the CISOs out there. Purple monkeys, they work.
Exactly.
So yes, I want to go into some of your experiences now. I mean, you briefly mentioned a Beirut, a Lebanese job. You mentioned, I can't remember which other ones we mentioned. It's only been 15 minutes and I've already forgotten, but that's just the nature of the beast. Why don't you give us maybe two or three examples of engagements that you've gone into? And what I want to do, again, the entire purpose of this podcast is to really make this raw and confronting to listeners, so that they go, okay, and they can get hopefully a podcast moment. So if you have maybe two or three examples that we can walk through, that would be fantastic.
I have one good one to start off with to talk about, to help identify people why this is such a hard issue.
Yep.
I was asked to go and do a spear phishing campaign on some employees. Now, a spear phishing campaign is different than a regular phishing. A phishing is where you cast a wide net. Usually it's just sometimes it's a poorly worded or sometimes it's a well-crafted email saying that you've got a FedEx package waiting for you, or you've won the lottery, or you've got some medical insurance you got to sign, or some kind of document that wants you to make you click that link or open up that attachment. That's like a regular phish. A spear phish is where you target specific employees or individuals. You're going through their social media accounts. You're looking through their life, basically, finding things that will make them way more likely to click the link, make it look like you could even then assume their identity to then send it to another coworker, and so they will guarantee to click the link, which will compromise their company. So the CEO asked me to do a spear phishing campaign. My scope of work, which means what I'm allowed and not allowed to do, was very simple. He said I could target from 1 to 100 people. I had to be successful, and I had to do it, and I had to record the names of who I did that to. Now, that sort of gave me pause, because I, in these teachable moments and these security awareness engagements, I like to refrain from actually naming names, because I don't think that's beneficial. You don't talk about the people who failed. You hype up and you report the people who succeed. You give people something to look up to, not something to look down on. So I was like, but it was a job. A job is a job. So I picked one employee. I went through their about page on the company's website. I found a treasure trove of information. There's so much information on the about page when you have like high level executives. It's like I went on their about page. I found all this information. I found a photo of them. I then through that searching and some more searching on Google, I found his Twitter account. I found that he went to a conference like 4 months before. So in a different city. And so what I did was I went to that conference website. I saw what speakers were there at that time. I then found a speaker that was in the same industry, in the same region. So I assumed, I went and did research on that speaker, assumed his identity, then sent the email like it was coming from that individual to my target. And offering him to be on the board of directors for this telecom enterprise, and he clicked the link within 12 hours.
Yeah.
And it was the CEO of the company who hired me.
Yeah.
It was like, it was literally the guy who hired me knowing that he was going to be spearfishing, that we're spearfishing the employees. So I was able to keep my contract engagement and my scope of work. I only targeted one person and I gave him the name of who did it. He wasn't very happy with me, but it proved the point that anybody can be, there needs to be education, not just random attacks. Yeah. It's like, so you have to tell your employees, and what you should gather from that is the information that we leave on social media. You think you're tweeting to like maybe 30 or 100 or 1,000 of your friends and relatives and coworkers when you're actually broadcasting out to the world. It's like anybody can take that information. I've compiled information on different attacks from different targets and different people on schools where their children are, when they take them to school. It's like vacations that they've gone on, places that they've been. All this information to assume the identity of one person to convince the next person, the employee, that I'm that coworker or I'm that friend, so they should definitely click on the link. And in every email that I send, I never, ever tell them to click the link. I just say, hey, here's this tragic thing that happened, or here's this horrible thing that happened, and we should really do something about this. And I don't say you should click on the link, but I provide a link to something that possibly bad has happened, and more people respond emotionally to tragic events than they actually think logically. So if I send you something that you want $1 million, you're gonna automatically think that it's fake. But if I tell you something horrible or tragic has happened in your area or recently or nearby, or is it piggybacking on a current event that is happening that is ongoing or recently passed that was tragic, then you're more likely to click on that link because you want information.
Now, the information part and the amount of information that you can find on social media profiles and the web, this is a bit of a paradox, right? And so if I look at Pony Express, for example, which is one of the number of projects that you're involved in, you know, in preparation for this podcast, I can see the different discussions that you've had, you know, the websites that you're listed on as having been interviewed on, et cetera, so Fox News and Scientific American, et cetera. So even for me, I can build up a profile of you so that I know what to discuss and when I'm having you on as a guest in a podcast. Now, the paradox of this, of course, is that in order for one who has, you know, a set of skills, capabilities that they can offer to the world, they need to be able to promote them. So, and, you know, you find that with a lot of security people who are like myself on LinkedIn, I have to give some information. Otherwise, it's very, very difficult to convey that that I'm doing something. And yet here's the, you know, the takeaway, I guess, and, you know, feel free to agree or disagree, is that I understand and am aware of the limit. And I make that judgment call as to how much information I put on.
Well, two things. One, there's only one cardinal rule on posting on the internet, okay? And I live by that rule.
Yeah.
Every single thing that I post, every single thing that I tweet, I put on a LinkedIn or I put on Facebook or wherever, because I leave all my stuff public. All my stuff is open for anybody to see because I know everybody's going to see it. Every post that I make, my first thing before I hit the enter button, before I click send, is, am I okay with my worst enemy seeing this, and what are they going to do with this information?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, hold on, sorry.
That's all right. Sorry.
Phone call. So it's like, what am I going to do?
That was your worst enemy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, so I'm like, what are they going to do with that information? And then that's how I shape it. Another thing, a good example of me, how I do OPSEC, how I actually protect myself online, is actually my move to Houston. My family was moving in June. The beginning of June, we bought this house.
Yeah.
And we were still living in Oklahoma, and all my tickets up till July 5th were flying in and out of Oklahoma City. Yeah. So we were in the process of moving our house from Oklahoma to Houston. So there was a month where there was still furniture, there was still valuables in our old house. Mm. So how was I supposed to actually do all the social media and all this stuff without? So what I did was and you can go back on my Twitter and go back on my Facebook. I did a whole OPSEC where I went and said, like, on June 4th, oh, by the way, we moved to Houston. We're now moved. Mm. And I made the whole appearance that we had moved completely into Houston. I put pictures of the house and, like, us being in the house. And then when I was flying out to these other countries, I actually put flying from Houston airport to that location.
Yeah.
And then flying back to that location. And that the whole time I was not in Houston, I was still in Oklahoma. It was proper OPSEC.
Yeah.
I didn't move into this house until July 5th. It's like, but the whole month of June, it had already appeared and it looked like I had already moved and I was there. We've gone on family vacations where I would tweet and Facebook normally, and then when we get home, I would go, oh, by the way, we've been gone for a week in you know, New Mexico. Here's some family vacation photos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And look, that's just something that that the majority of folks just won't adhere to at all because they don't understand the risks. And I guess that's, you know, that's the point, right?
Yes.
People in, you know, enterprise corporations which that have a security, well, they're big enough, first of all, to have a security team. Number two, which want to take an external engagement from someone like yourself to then train that security team, to then train the people. There are, you know, multitude of others who aren't in those areas. There are a multitude of people who are, say, the younger kids and the teenagers who won't have that experience, who I guess need to rely on, say, the education, the campus, or their parents. What are your thoughts about, you know, policy, education policy, governmental, both state and federal, local, wherever you are, policy that can maybe encourage and improve and assist improving the basic internet hygiene? Because it is effectively hygiene. OPSEC, operational security, is kind of like, yeah, good hygiene, right?
One of the things that terrified me the most is the phrase, we're from the government and we're here to help.
Yeah.
So
look, I have to remain balanced on this podcast, but
well, I understand that. It's like, luckily, I tell people I'm at a great liberty because of the fact that I know I'm never ever going to get, you know, top secret clearance for anything. Yeah. So I can usually speak my mind pretty well.
Oh, good. I'm nuts as well.
But I think instead of what we need is we do need more involvement of parents. It's like, and one of the things is, it's a generational thing where it's like, it's hard to understand that. It's like, I give my children, I've got two children, and I give them trust, but I give them verification as well. In other words, I don't monitor where they go or what conversations they have. I let them use their devices. They have mobile devices, they have laptops, with the caveat that at any moment, at any time, I can access that device and they're gonna give it to me and I'm gonna read their text and I'm gonna read what they've said and I'm gonna be able to review that to see if there's anything suspicious. It's like, and I don't think that's not an invasion of privacy because I've already established there's no expectation of privacy in this house when it comes to their safety. Mm. So when they leave the house, it's like, when they get older and stuff, you know, then it's going to be, they're going to be private. They're going to be able to protect their data. I don't want to be a part of that. Mm. It's like, it's not my business. But when they're under my protection, it's like, then yes. It's like, and I know there are some people that are going to, like, you know, expand that and say, well, that's what the government's trying to do.
I was just about to say that wording is what the government would say, you know, and granted, a government with the you know, with law, a judicial system that isn't shit is, you know, like, would actually be able to affect that to a more or less degree, right? You know, in the States or Australia. It's, you know, I've read the, you know, the ASIO Intelligence Act, and it's very well written. There's a lot of demands to get to the point where you intrude on the person's privacy. You have to do a lot.
And that's horrible. And there was the movie Anon. I'm going to steal a quote from it because it resonated with me, and I'm going to get it wrong because I said it that way. It says, just because I have nothing to hide doesn't mean I have something I want you to see.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the key crux to it. It's like, I'm not saying that I have stuff that I need to keep hidden or I need to hide, but there are things I don't want you to see. I don't think you have a business of seeing. It's like, it's not something that I'm, like, embarrassed about. It's like, some of it is. It's like, you know, it's like, but it's mine.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's for me to know. It's like, and you never to find out.
It's one of the previous episodes. I was speaking with Dr. Sulette Dreyfus, and she's awesome. She's a privacy lecturer, researcher, down in Melbourne, discussing, you know, very similar things. And she came up with a quote which was talking about all those things which aren't illegal and which you know, may involve, you know, your sexuality or may involve your identity or may involve. You know, of a host of things which you don't want anyone to know, even if they're not illegal, and yet that's the kind of stuff that can be accessed. Well, now, of course, you know, we've got to consider that stuff can be accessed too by criminals, and they don't really care about the morality of whatever, you know, they don't care about the morals, and they're not restricted by governance and legislation. They'll use that information as a money pot. Pure and simple. That information is worth its weight in gold, especially if it's compromising to you as an individual. And then again, that pulls us back to the necessity for greater awareness within the public.
That's the perfect aspect. It's like criminals can access this. The OPM data breach was the breach of data from a government agency. I tell people, it's like, look, the places I search for porn, that's between me and my government. I don't want anybody else to know about that.
Yeah.
It's like they may take data. They may, like, actually snoop on data, but that's fine. That's part of living. That's part of life. That's what happens. That's where your tax dollars go. But at least protect it from other people being able to get a hold of it.
Yeah.
And that's what upsets me the most about this electronic eavesdropping. They can't. The National Security Agency, with security in the middle of their name, couldn't keep a guy with, like, you know, in the movie, he had a Rubik's Cube, but, you know, whatever, with a USB drive, it's like to take that data out of their network.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not supposed to trust them with my data.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? In Australia at the moment, there's a My Health Record. It's a government initiative. It's smart, right? You centralize all the health records, and then anonymized part of the data, and then you can use that data to, you know, to build charts and projections and stuff. It's really cool, you know, great idea. But, you know, the way they're defending it, and also the way that they've actually approached the situation, which I won't get into details too much, but it's effectively an opt-out program as opposed to an opt-in, which is much more forceful. Jeez. And pressuring.
Right.
You know, the comments by the Minister for Health were, you know, military grade security, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I got a bit pissed off, actually. So I posted something saying, well, you know, NSA, Pentagon, DOD, you know, a whole range of things have been hacked and or breached or infiltrated. You think that the health department's any better? And then literally about 3 days or 4 days ago from today, three or 4 days ago, Singapore, considered to have some of the most robust cybersecurity in the world, their health records just got pilfered, just got breached, including the Prime Minister's details. So,
it's an issue. Whenever someone tells me military grade anything, I'm saying, yes, exactly. Yeah. Something that was built by the person with the lowest bid. Exactly. That's exactly what that is, military grade. Something that was constructed by the person who had the lowest bid.
You know, all you need to do then is... you know, you and I both know Chris Roberts. I thoroughly enjoyed the speech that you guys made in Tel Aviv. But, you know, buzzword bingo. All you need in front of military grade is a couple of other words like machine learning. Machine learning, yeah. Artificial intelligence, robotic, military grade systems. That sounds awesome.
Exactly. It's terrifying.
So, look, we're sort of heading towards the end, but I think we've been able to discuss the areas that I wanted to discuss with you and draw, you know, and paint a picture as to why this shit matters, right? But we've got time for, I guess, one more anecdote, if you have an example of maybe an amusing engagement, and then wrap up with a shameless plug. Tell us all about where you're heading, what you're doing, where the speeches are, you know, which books should we buy of yours, etc.
Right. I'll do one on, which is, so we're talking about military grade and government stuff. So I did a contract job in D.C. Near the Pentagon. It's like for a contractor.
Yeah.
And they were very assured of their security, their robo security. So they wanted to...
their biggest downfall from the get-go.
Exactly. And one of the problems is sometimes people just want a check mark. They don't want an actual, you know, to see results.
Yeah.
And so this is one of those things which I didn't know at the time. So, and the funny thing is they used some of my videos as their security awareness training programs. So I actually changed in my appearance just lightly just to try to, like, you know, help out. And it did, I didn't have to worry about that. And they were like, you can get in this, if you can get in the server room, we want you to see. If you can get in the server room, we want to see. You can get here, you want to get in here. So long story short, I break into the building. It's like I get in. It's like, and I then gather in some documents and everything that didn't let, I did that the night before because they said I could start at midnight till then. It's like they were being very specific on the time. So at 12:01, I actually broke in when they weren't expecting me to be in there and gathered some stuff. And then the next morning, you know, about 8 hours later, I go in disguise with those documents in hand that verify the reason why I'm supposed to be there. And like 20 minutes after that, I'm in their server room. The guy comes in like 5 minutes later, freaking out, like, you're not supposed to be in here. And I'm like, it's under scopes. Yeah, but we didn't think you could get in. It's you're not supposed to be here. This is a severe, and you're done for the day. So I literally, they canceled the rest of the engagement. It's like, I spend the next day talking to CEO, CFO, CEO, all the C's and the O's were there, and trying to explain to them, it's like, you need to make parameters based on reality, not what you think is going to happen. And it's like, and security is not something that you just, you know, you put out there and you say that you're going to, that you can fix. It's mitigating risk.
Yeah.
It's not about eliminating risk. It's about mitigating as much risk as you possibly can and then offsetting what you can't and then accepting what's left over and then responding to that properly. So they learned a lot on, it's not just trying, you can't just eliminate risk. We can't be in an industry or in a world where we're trying to just fix everything. Yeah. Like breaking into the car. That helps mitigate the risk. It doesn't eliminate the risk. We have a car alarm or a car insurance to help offset some of that risk. But then when you park the car someplace, you're accepting some risk that it could happen.
Yeah.
So you're careful about where you park your car or where it's located.
Yeah.
It's like, because you're going to have to accept that risk. The same thing people need to understand on the computer. When they're on the internet, they're accepting some risk. It's not a safe environment everywhere they go.
Yeah.
So they have to be responsible for that. It's not up to the computer to protect them. It's not up to the antivirus to protect them or the firewall to protect them or their corporate policies to protect them. It's up to them as well to understand where they're going and how they're using that machine. And we keep taking that responsibility away from them, like they don't have it anymore. Mm. And that's what is causing our main problem.
Yeah.
We need to give them and make them responsible again for what they're doing, their actions, and what they're
power.
Doing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Educate, empower, and enforce. Those are the three E's. I've talked about that for over a decade, I think.
Yeah.
It's like those are the three E's that we have to give our users. We need to educate them, we need to empower them, and then we need to enforce those policies that we've given them.
Yeah, one great example that just springs to mind with you saying that about, you know, sort of focusing on the younger kids, Girl Scouts America, they have a cyber badge now. I don't know too many details, but that, you know, that's awesome, right? That's teaching them young about the importance of this stuff and in a meaningful, fun way. which it should be. Education shouldn't be, you know.
And it's about time. Yeah, and it's about time. I've said time and time again, it's like, if you want to get totally honest and upfront about everything, it's like women started this industry. It's like before men got involved in it. It's like we just took it over. Yeah. And so
we've done that with a lot of stuff, sadly.
Oh, yes, we have. Yes, we have. So it's like, so I'm glad the fact that the Girl Scouts are bringing that up. It's like my daughter, and you can ask her, she's a self-rescuing princess. Mm. She doesn't need anybody to help her out. It's like she's got it. And so I think that's great that they're bringing that up. It's like, because we need that to happen to every child. It's like every person, I mean, especially teenagers now, they live such a public life, and it's so subject to like bullying and cyberbullying and harassment online, because we expose ourselves, it's like, to the world, and we think that everybody's going to treat us nicely, and then we're surprised when it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Okay, well, shameless plug time. What's happening? Where can we see you in talks? What can we read of yours, etc.?
Well, the good handy place to start is jasonestreet.com. jasonestreet.com. That's got my scheduled calendar of where I'm going to be at. It talks about my trainings, and it's got like links for the books. It's like for my National Geographic special. I'm going to be at Black Hat and DEF CON. I'm giving a training, which there's still some slots available for training for a security awareness campaign in your own environment, in your enterprise.
Awesome.
And I'm also going to be giving training at DerbyCon and the Texas Cyber Summit coming up in October.
The training, that would be awesome opportunity. You're targeting that to the full gamut, people who want to get involved in, from an attack side, CISOs, everyone in between?
Yeah, I'm trying to do. It's like what we talked about earlier. It's like I'm trying to empower the enterprise to do security awareness for their people. So what we do is I'm targeting blue team or like the defenders. It's like IT administrators, security professionals, and I'm showing them how to use red team tactics, social engineering tactics, how to use the Bash Bunny and the Wi-Fi Pineapple, and how to use spear phishing attack techniques to actually use those tools not to breach their company, but to educate their users, how to create educational moments for the users so they understand what security awareness is. But then the second half of the class is actually the nuts and bolts on how to start a security awareness program in your enterprise, how to get upper management buy-in to the process, how to talk and analyze your employees and get them aware of security awareness.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds fantastic. So certainly encourage anyone who's interested to check those things out at jasonestreet.com. Is it .com? .com.
Yeah, .com.
And Jason, absolute pleasure. It's great to have a chat with you again. And good luck with all the future endeavors and all the future educating.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me on. It was a real honor.
My pleasure. Thanks, mate. Ciao.
Ciao.
Welcome to our podcast at agendadigitale.eu.